The conventional wisdom used to be spare the rod, spoil the child. But over the past few decades, our cultural attitudes have been changing a lot. Around the world, dozens of countries have already made it illegal to use physical force to discipline children. Now, an editorial in the latest issue of the Canadian Medical Association Journal argues it's time that Canada did the same. Research seems to show that spanking is ineffective in dealing with children's behavioral problems. Corporal punishment has also been linked to a range of negative effects later in life, including depression, anxiety, and substance use. But those who oppose bans on spanking question that research, and they argue that parents, not governments, are in the best position to decide what's best for children. So, should spanking children be made illegal? It's time for a Q debate. Joining me from our studio in Ottawa is Dr. John Fletcher. He's the editor-in-chief of the Canadian Medical Association Journal and the author of the editorial that's been getting so much attention. Dr. Fletcher, hello.
Hello, good morning, Brent.
And also in our studio in Ottawa is Dave Quist. He is executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. Hello, Mr. Quist.
Good morning. Good to be with you, Brent.
Nice to have both of you with us. Dr. Fletcher, you've called for Section 43 of Canada's Criminal Code to be abolished, and that is the part that allows parents and teachers to use force against children under their care by way of correction, provided that it is, and I'm quoting here, reasonable under the circumstances. Can you explain why you think it's important to make that change?
Yes, thank you, Brent. The major thrust of what I was writing was to say that we need a better toolbox for parents to draw from when disciplining their children, not just physical punishment. And I think the reason that Section 43 needs to be changed is because it's a section of the law that specifically sanctions using physical force in disciplining children, suggesting that this is the sort of the government-approved way of bringing discipline to children.
And what
so I just want to be clear about one thing is I'm not asking for the criminalization of parents who use spanking. What I'm suggesting is that that this code sends the wrong message.
But do you believe the research that seems to indicate that there are negative effects associated with spanking? Are you on side with that research?
I think that's absolutely right. What we've highlighted elsewhere in the journal is a large body of literature suggesting that regular spanking can lead to later problems in life with aggression and mental health problems, and that regular spanking itself is not an effective way of getting kids to behave properly.
So, Dave, let me get your reaction to what Dr. Fletcher has just said. If there are important extremely negative effects associated with spanking, why shouldn't it be criminalized?
Well, I would agree with part of what Dr. Fletcher said, and I would disagree with part of what he said. I would certainly agree with the part that parents need a range of tools in their toolbox. That's actually a phrase that I've used many times as well. In fact, much research has shown that the best order and the best outcome for disciplinary children begins with a verbal explanation of what's going on and to say, don't do this because the consequences are such, then a nonverbal punishment. So it might be something that we're going to take away a timeout, or we're going to have a favorite toy taken away for a period of time, or something like that, followed by what is often referred to as conditional spanking, so that it's sort of an escalation from an explanation and a warning to further withdrawal of something, right through to follow up with a spank as dictated by the Supreme Court of Canada, which is an open hand on the buttocks. It's not a slap, it's not a hit, it's not a yelling at the child, because there are negative consequences with that. And the part that I would disagree with Dr. Fletcher on is the some of the outcomes around the research for mental health and so on.
Okay.
The couple of studies that I've seen, the meta-analysis, if you will, actually included spanking appropriately, but also included what I would term child abuse, which is a more of a hit or a strike in the child. And when we lump all those things together, we can't differentiate between appropriate spanking and inappropriate spanking. So we need to be aware of that.
Okay, Dave, some of the research seems to indicate that when a child is abused, it began as a disciplinary action and escalated into abuse. What do you say to that?
Well, certainly there are going to be cases like that. I think the vast majority of parents love their children. children and want them to be grow up to be healthy, mature adults that can contribute back to society. There are going to be exceptions in approach, and I think that's what Dr. Fletcher was saying as well. I don't want to put words into his mouth, but at the same time, we have situations where we need better techniques, we need better education, we need better parenting skills, and mm-hmm. we learn those things as we move along. There are going to be exceptions, unfortunately, and those are the exceptions that we need to be aware of. But we also need to know that the vast majority of parents will use discipline in an appropriate manner.
Okay, Dr. Fletcher, Canada does have strict guidelines about what constitutes illegal spanking. They've been in place for a very long time. The child must be between 2 and 12 years of age. The blows must only be administered by an open palm. The force has to be transitory and trifling in nature. These guidelines are precise. So how much psychological damage can we really attribute to that kind of circumscribed spanking?
Well, I think Dave raises a very good point, which is that a lot of the research does not differentiate the sort of spanking and lumps in together really quite harsh parenting with I think what Dave is talking about, which is a much less frequent spanking and in the context of leading up to it with communication. So when you do look at spanking as it's practiced by large numbers of parents with large numbers of children over a long length of time, you see that this kind of undifferentiated spanking does indeed lead to the outcomes as described in the review by Durrant and Ensom, published later in our journal. I think the meta-analyses that Dave is referring to are for us a specific form of child discipline, which is, I think, probably not covered in the research that is in our edition of the journal.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear, usually the studies on which this evidence of harm is based talk about frequency of spanking down to about once a month, mm-hmm. and that frequency of spanking less than that is not really measured or taken account as harmful.
But
we're talking about the more frequent forms of spanking here.
But can we just look at the research in general? I mean, I think that there's some doubt cast on the research simply because it's very difficult to create a control group if the exercise is about using force against children. So some people have questioned the research in general. Do you, Dr. Fletcher, have any problems with the research?
I mean, you raise a good point, which is that these aren't experimental studies,
mm-hmm.
Because to experiment with using force on children is not ethical. You can remove force. You can use a less harsh form of punishment in an experimental study. But most of the research is indeed observing what parents do. And there's sometimes the problem of the chicken and the egg, which came first. Mm-hmm. Is it that badly behaved children attract more punishment, or is it that the more punishment leads to children who are badly
right.
behaved?
Right.
Now, the researchers have thought of that and have done their level best to design studies and use statistical controlling techniques. And if it were one or two studies, then I guess you could explain away the association. But when it's a large body of literature, with large numbers of children and parents over 20 years, that's leading to very similar conclusions, then yes, I do trust that research.
Let's look at some of the legal implications here, Dave. If someone decided to hit another adult, even just once or twice with an open hand, as the courts have said parents are allowed to do to correct children, that could still be considered assault. And I guess the question legally is, why shouldn't children have the same protection?
Well, I have heard that argument before, and I think one of the biggest differences is that we can't equate a hopefully mature adult of pick an age, 25 years of age, with a child of 5 or 6. A child of 5 or 6, the children between 2 and 12, as the Supreme Court of Canada has said, are eligible, and I don't say have to, but eligible for physical corporal punishment. Those are children that we're still shaping and maturing, and they are still learning, and they're not fully cognizant yet of right and wrong, mm-hmm. and consequences. You know, 5-year-old running around doesn't realize necessarily that running out to the street, they may get hit by a car or something going down the road. And so we need to restrain them at different points when their safety is certainly at issue. Hopefully, a 25-year-old adult would know the difference there and would not act in that same way. So as parents, we're still shaping and growing and maturing our children through those early stages. And that's really important that we have those controls and those aspects. The adult, there are other consequences if they act inappropriately within society, as we've set out rules and guidelines, or we call them laws, that if they act against those laws, they may get a ticket or a fine by the police if they're speeding down the road. They may go to jail if it's a heinous crime of some sort, and everywhere in between. So there are outcomes and consequences that go with that. And for children, this is one tool, but not the only tool that parents need to keep in their toolbox.
Dr. Fletcher, you said at the outset of our conversation that you have no interest in criminalizing parents, but this is one of the concerns about repealing Section 43, that it would potentially criminalize someone who maybe forces an uncooperative child into a car seat or physically puts a child to bed. Aren't you creating a slippery slope, or is there a danger of that?
Well, I think the law is already clear on what constitutes assault, and the courts have discretion to decide when an assault is trivial or de minimis. And there are lots of examples of things that go on where people are not prosecuted. For example, some of the jostling in crowds at sporting venues, or even on the pitch, people aren't necessarily prosecuted for assault. And I would trust the judiciary and the law in this country to decide when assault is assault, even on a child. And I don't think anybody is arguing for a law that allows parents to physically harm children. Mm-hmm. I think we're all agreeing that that the almost trivial slap with the open hand is okay. And the point I make is that if you want to improve parenting, then calling the police is the wrong approach. And the right approach is I think, what Dave was outlining earlier on, which is understanding your child's needs. Why are they behaving this way?
Then why do we need to alter the criminal code?
Because the criminal code sends the wrong message. It's saying that there's a specific exemption for the law on assault. And the person you can hit is one of the most vulnerable people in society, children. If it's okay to use force in certain circumstances, why not list all of the people who we can use force on? But the trend of the law has been against that, has been to remove people with exemptions. When the law was first brought in, it was supposedly okay to use force on your wife and on your servants. But times have changed, and it's an old exemption, and we know more now than we did 120 years ago, more than we did 20 years ago. And that's why I'm calling for this law to change.
Canada would not be alone if we removed this law. Many countries since the year 2000 have decided to move in the other direction. So, Dave Quist, what do you think about that? Is the tide against maintaining this statute in the criminal code?
Well, there has been a trend, and perhaps the longest standing one that a great deal of research was done is around Sweden, who banned spanking in 1979. And there's been a great deal of research or follow-up since that time. And interestingly, two leading scholars in this area, Dr. Durant out of Winnipeg originally, I believe, and Dr. Lars Allaire out of Oklahoma State University, have looked at the same research and come to vastly different points of view on the exact same research, the exact same data. Interestingly, when we look at Sweden, since 1979, there has actually been an increase in levels of child abuse and increase in the levels of juvenile delinquency. Now, the evidence doesn't point directly to that causal effect. However, we can't dismiss that as a factor in this whole process as well. When we look at child spanking, we often, it's a very emotional issue. Mm-hmm. And we want to deal with it very emotionally and say it's wrong to strike somebody. But at the same time, the data, the real research, what the inference from that data is, doesn't support it. And so I'm concerned that if we eliminate Section 43 out of the Criminal Code of Canada, that we'll actually begin a process that, in a sense, have already started, where we know there are cases of a parent smacking a child on the bottom appropriately at a shopping mall or McDonald's or whatever it might be in a public space, and somebody has called 911 or somebody has called Children's Aid Services. Mm-hmm. Now, some of those have been dismissed, no question about that. But there have been cases, unfortunately, where the child has been taken away for a period of time until they get it all sorted out. Is that a risk that we want to take? And I would say, no, it's not. Parents are the best arbiters of their child's well-being as opposed to the state itself.
What do you think about that, Dr. Fletcher? Is it possible that criminalizing spanking would encroach too far on private family matters?
Yes, but I say again, I'm not calling for the criminalization of spanking.
The removal of the statute.
I think it is a worry that that all of us as parents would have that we don't want to get in trouble with the police and social services. And I would hope that police and social services and the law would be sensible in the application of any changed law. So there is, I admit, that risk. But then there's the risk on the other side, which is that most cases of serious harm to children do start with an episode of discipline. And keeping this statute here does send the message that physical punishment is an okay form of discipline. And I would say it's the research shows that physical punishment, regular physical punishment and harsh physical punishment, can lead to long-term problems and is not an effective way of getting children to behave well.
And I would suggest at that point that rather than banning spanking altogether, that what we need is better parental education on how what appropriate levels of discipline are. Often as we're raised, that's the way that we will raise our children in turn.
Yes.
And we need to learn more in that process. We know more about attachment theory. Dr. Gordon Neufeld out of Vancouver has done a great deal of research in knowing the outcomes of that. And we could talk about a whole program of full-day kindergarten and lack of attachment. But I realize that's not the topic of the day. But as we learn those things, we need to educate each other. We need to educate it through journals such as the CMAJ. We need to educate it through research that's going to our decision makers, our politicians, through shows such as yourself.
So what do you think, Dave, if the statute was withdrawn, if there was a concurrent program of education or some toolkit that could be given to parents to help discuss disciplinary matters, then would that work for you? Would you be happy with that?
I wouldn't be happy with the removal of Section 43, but I would certainly be very supportive of better education for parents, as whether it's through faith groups or whether it's through community organizations or operated by the local provincial healthcare, community healthcare organizations. Those are very supportable and have the very good opportunity of educating new young parents. I mean, my children are adults now, but at the same time, when they were newborns, no matter how many books you read, you're still not prepared. And so we can do better in certainly that way of educating ourselves, learning from what didn't work. You know, Dr. Spock was many years ago, and he's, in hindsight, said, you know, I didn't have it all right. And so as we move forward, we can learn and do a better job of those things.
Dr. Fletcher, your editorial calls for repealing Section 43, and you also call for more education for parents on alternatives to corporal punishment. But considering that 50% of parents still spank their children, how would you like to see the approach to parenting change?
Thank you, Brent. The main point of my editorial was to point, exactly as Dave was suggesting, to better education for parents about better ways of bringing up and disciplining children, because I'm certainly not calling for a society without discipline. Children need to know that they are loved and cherished and valuable members of the family and society. But they also need to know that they're not the centre of the world, and they do need to learn how to get on with others and what right and wrong is. And again, the research shows that parenting programs, where they've been introduced, have resulted in better behaved children and happier parents. And I think there's an opportunity for more provision of these sorts of programs at the times in life when parents are starting out. So starting out as parents around about the time of antenatal classes, Parents are keen to do the right thing. Here's an opportunity to give them those tools. Similarly, when starting school, another chance when parents want to do the right thing, and through government, through faith groups, through community groups, we can help them. And so I think we're in danger of being in violent agreement on this particular point.
But you're not in agreement over Section 43. So let me just go back to you, Dave. Sure. Listening to what Dr. Fletcher just said, do you support the kind of programs and the vision that he just described to us?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a great deal of what the work of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada is all about, is to look at some of the data, look at some of the research, remove the emotional side of it, but look at what best outcomes are. When we're making social policy decisions, we often don't know the outcomes for many years to come. You know, when the GST changes on July 1st, and I go buy a washing machine tomorrow, I'm going to pay less or more according to what that change actually is. When we make social policy changes, it takes maybe a full generation or more before we actually see what those outcomes are. And so the education of our children growing up today will make better parents of tomorrow. And I think that's very appropriate.
Gentlemen, it was great to talk to you. Thank you for being with us. I know we'll get lots and lots of mail about this subject. So thank you for taking time and putting out your cases so nicely.
Good to be with you, Brent. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Dr. John Fletcher is the editor-in-chief of the Canadian Medical Association Journal. Dave Quist is executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. They were both in our studio in Ottawa.